You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange. Thanks for joining us. The JX starts today with a debrief, where JPR reporters discuss the stories they've been covering this week, including a major loss for wind energy in Humboldt County, an update on a Jackson County fire district, and controversy around forests in Curry County. I'm Maria Carter, NPR's news or JPR's news director.
I'm Justin Higginbottom, public health and safety reporter.
I'm Jane Vaughn, housing, homelessness, and education reporter.
And I'm Emma J. Nelson, JPR's intern for the summer.
Emma J., you reported on the Humboldt Bay offshore wind project this week. What's the update there?
Well, the project lost a pretty significant chunk of its funding last week, I'd say. The U.S. Department of Transportation withdrew the nearly $427 million grant that was awarded
to
the project.
All?
No, that's it. No, actually, it's not. Because on top of that, the Maritime Administration terminated its $20 million grant to the offshore wind project's planning and design. In the announcement of the cancellations, the Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy called these, quote, fantasy wind projects. The announcement said the funds would be redistributed to port upgrades and other infrastructure projects where possible.
And you said the $20 million was going toward the planning and design. How was the larger grant going to be used?
It would have gone towards just about everything else. The Humboldt Bay Harbor would get extensive port upgrades from paved access roads to a larger area to dock boats, so just a better port overall. It would also, of course, fund the construction of the terminal itself. Chris Mickelson from the Harbor District said that the terminal, which is called the Heavy Lift Marine Terminal, is true to its name. It'd be doing a lot of the heavy lifting for the offshore wind project and the Northern California coast as a whole. That terminal would be used to assemble, launch, and maintain a fleet of floating wind turbines. And once deployed, it's estimated that those turbines could power over 500,000 homes in California.
Half a million. That's a lot.
Yeah.
So is the project over then?
That's a little unclear at the moment, but pretty sure no. Mickelson says the funding withdrawal could be an opportunity for the state of California to kind of step up to the bat and fill those gaps in funding. However, he didn't mention any set plans. It was more just kind of a hopeful statement. Mickelson did say that the Harbor District still has a good relationship with the Department of Transportation as a whole.
The U.S. Department of Transportation.
Yes. It just doesn't currently align with the administration's goals. So according to Mickelson, the Harbor will apply for other federal grants in the future.
Maybe after this administration,
maybe.
It sounds like.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks, Emma J. And Jane, you wrote a story this week about Jackson County Fire District. District 5 here in the Rogue Valley. What's going on there?
So basically, the Oregon Department of Justice recently decided that they are not going to be investigating Jackson County Fire District 5 for potential criminal conduct. The Jackson County District Attorney had sent the DOJ some information about a year ago, and he was requesting that they review current and former employees at Jackson County Fire District 5. The concern was maybe potential fraud, theft, and other misconduct there. But then the DOJ recently said that they reviewed the information and there wasn't enough there to merit an investigation. They didn't think that it would, quote, lead to evidence of provable criminal conduct. They said that they even reviewed some more material that was sent over by the district. They met with the fire district chief and the legal counsel and the board chair and some other people. And then they still came to the same conclusion, which was that they would not be investigating.
Okay, but this matter got forwarded on to the Department of Justice. Can you give us some background about, like, why that would be happening?
Yeah, there's been a lot going on at Jackson County Fire District 5 within the last year and a half or so. It seems like it's quieted down a little bit there. Last year, they had the majority of their board resign pretty suddenly. They fired their chief last summer because an independent investigator found sustained allegations that he had covered up sexual harassment, bullied employees, and interfered with a government promotion board. The district then faced a massive budget shortfall, which they're still struggling with a little bit. About a year later, last fall was really the worst of it. And then they actually signed what's called an intergovernmental agreement, an IGA, with a nearby fire district, Fire District 3. And so that sounds like helped them out really a lot. So Fire District 3 is providing administrative support and other services.
So all those, like, back office things.
Exactly, that they're sort of sharing. And the oversight of their chief, whose name is Mike Hussey. So Fire District 5 doesn't have its own chief anymore. They kind of share a chief with Fire District 3, and they're operating under this intergovernmental agreement. So there's been some ongoing turmoil there that seems to have sort of settled out a little bit recently. But then in more recent news, there's an article in the Rogue Valley Times that the former chief who was fired, Charles Hanley, was fired last summer, has apparently filed a lawsuit against current and former board members in the district. He's alleging retaliatory defamation. So again, I haven't been able to get a copy of that document yet, but there's a great story in the Rogue Valley Times about it. So there might be some more bumps ahead for the district.
Well, you speak of more bumps ahead. What's next? Get out that crystal ball.
Yeah, well, we'll have to see. So I talked to the fire chief this week, Mike Hussey, and he said the district has actually forwarded some more information on to the Jackson County Sheriff's Office for consideration regarding this matter, the DOJ investigation that wasn't. So they forwarded on some new information. If the sheriff's office deems that it's relevant, it could then be sent to the district attorney and then maybe sent on to the DOJ again for further review. So it's possible the DOJ decides that that information is enough to merit an investigation. We don't know. We'll have to see. We don't know if the sheriff's office has even decided it's worth a review yet. But I talked to the board chair and the fire chief this week, and they said that they really want to focus on moving forward, serving the community. They feel that they did their due diligence, they did their part and passed stuff along, and you know, the powers that be made their decision. Like I said, the district is still struggling with fiscal management and staffing. Not having enough staff is a big problem. So they kind of want to put this behind them and focus on other district stuff and move forward there.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Jane.
Sure.
Justin, you've been reporting on efforts in Curry County to open up logging on federal land. How do they want to do that?
Yeah, well, still kind of figuring that out. But basically, I caught a short remark by a commissioner in a board meeting, actually in early August, where that commissioner said the county had proposed a draft lease of federal land USDA officials, and that this lease was well received, and they were kind of going back and forth with it. Supposedly, Commissioner Patrick Hollinger has traveled to Washington, D.C. on his own dime to meet with groups, and he's pitched the idea to top USDA officials, and those officials loved it. You know, that's what was claimed in this meeting. So I filed a public records request for that draft lease because that wasn't included in any agenda or board meeting documents. And I reported the details earlier this week. So that proposal was to lease 80,000 acres of national forest land for 25 years. And it would open up that area to sustainable harvests of timber, which would occur on up to 2,000 acres annually. 90% of the timber sale revenue would be kept by Curry County, and the U.S. Forest Service would keep the other 10% for, like, staffing and management. And the draft actually cites explicitly President Donald Trump's executive order, which calls for the expansion of timber production as kind of a legal basis for this possible draft lease.
Yeah. So what did the Forest Service have to say about this lease?
A spokesperson got back to me. They said they did discuss the lease with commissioners over the summer, and they had told the commissioners that they actually don't have authority to lease National Forest System land for timber harvests. So they shot the idea down, which is what I reported. Instead, the Forest Service said they discussed other tools like good neighbor authority agreements with the county. And a good neighbor agreement basically allows the counties to work with the Forest Service on usually restoration and sort of management stuff.
Oregon already has some of these good neighbor agreements, right?
Yeah.
State level.
They're not super unique. Interestingly, though, they don't allow timber harvesting. So those agreements aren't made to bring revenue into a county, which is the entire goal for these commissioners. So, just for some background about the county, Curry County is in a really tough financial situation right now. They have a lot of forest, a lot of timber, but they can't log it due to environmental and conservation regulations. You know, the sheriff's office has actually reduced the types of calls they respond to because they've had to lay off deputies because they don't have funds. So that's the background for why commissioners are trying to find other revenue sources.
So this issue and your reporting, we should note, was brought up in a recent board meeting. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so residents showed up to a board meeting this week wondering about this draft lease, which just to be clear, which I reported in the piece, has no chance of being accepted by the Forest Service. They've shut that down. But that the county has even tried, I think, was surprising to residents. I would say newsworthy. And when this was brought up, the commissioners totally dismissed this draft lease. They said, you know, they weren't trying to lease federal land. Rather, they were actually just working on this good neighbor agreement with the Forest Service, which they made it sound like this was the purpose all along. Commissioner Trost said that 80,000 acre figure from our reporting came from an offhanded remark he had made in session, and there's nothing to back up that proposal, which is untrue. That does come from the county's draft lease, which I have, and again, which was rejected by the Forest Service.
So they say this is all just a discussion of the Good Neighbor Agreement with the Forest Service then?
Right. And again, the Good Neighbor Authority, so the Good Neighbor Authority allows the Forest Service to enter into agreements with local governments for management work. But it's usually to, like I mentioned, to do like restoration or maybe wildfire mitigation. And it forbids the kind of activity commissioners want to do. Here's just quoting from that Good Neighbor Authority. Counties and tribes are not authorized to collect or retain revenue generated from the sale of timber. You know, Commissioner Hollinger read out a draft, I guess, from their potential Good Neighbor Agreement at that meeting this week,
which closely resembled the draft lease, we should note.
Yeah, very closely. And he said, you know, the purpose of their agreement that they're floating the Forest Service is to facilitate a cooperative, sustainable timber harvesting and restorative forest stewardship program on national forest lands. And quote, timber sales generate revenue for Curry County, as well as the USDA and Forest Service, intended to support economic development. So yeah, like you mentioned, that language mirrors the language found in their draft lease. And it's also clearly not allowed in a good neighbor agreement. Trost later emailed me and at least acknowledged that the county did send this draft lease to the Forest Service, but he said it was just to open the door to a good neighbor agreement.
So why would commissioners use that strategy, sending a lease instead of just like going through a normal route in getting this agreement?
I have no idea. And Trost hasn't answered that.
Fair enough.
Yeah, but you know, this process of commissioners trying to open up federal land for timber harvesting, I think should be transparent. You know, and that's why their meeting this week kind of brought residents, because they had no idea that commissioners were still attempting to do this. You know, and just to be clear, many in the county want this. They actually want to open up their forests for logging. There's also many that don't. They want to keep those forests conserved. But everyone should know what's been going on in the background in Curry County, you know, especially when commissioners have made pretty bold claims about this coming agreement. You know, Commissioner Hollinger has called it one of a kind and a potential model for other counties. And I'm still trying to piece together what that actually means, but we'll have some more reporting on that this week.
Okay, well, thank you, Justin. And in a few days, it will be the fifth anniversary of that Almeda fire that destroyed thousands of homes in the Rogue Valley. Next week, during Morning Edition, we'll have stories looking at how the Rogue Valley has recovered and what still needs to be done. Jane and Emma J., you both focused on housing a bit. Jane, can you tell us a little bit about your story?
Yeah, so it has to do with Royal Oaks Mobile Manor in Phoenix, which was a mobile home park that burned down in the Almeda fire. I've been covering this process for years. There's been a lot of sort of turmoil with trying to replace the homes at Royal Oaks. The state had tried to buy some manufactured homes, were found to be unfit to live in. There's a lawsuit ongoing there, but it's been a really long process. People are now starting to move back in there. So my story is basically reflecting back on that five-year process at Royal Oaks, what happened, what went wrong there, and focusing on one woman who used to live at Royal Oaks and her story.
And Emma J., you took a look at housing, but a solution for temporary housing. What was that solution and how did it work out?
Yeah, so the Gateway Transitional Housing Project is over in Talent. It housed a bunch of students and families from the Phoenix Talent School District in state-provided RVs until actually just this August. So kind of the inverse of Jane's, of moving back in versus they're starting to move out. I looked at how the state, city, and school district all came together to bring these people back home.
And Justin, briefly tell us a little about your story.
Yeah, well, basically during the Alameda fire, first responders and actually residents in the Rogue Valley learned a lot of lessons. And in my reporting, we'll deal with which lessons they've learned and how things have changed since 2020.
And to summarize, get your go bag ready.
Yeah, get a go bag ready.
Okay, well, that's it for the debrief this week. Thanks for listening. You can reach the newsroom with comments on our coverage and suggestions for things we should cover in the future through our news tip line. That's on our website at ijpr.org. And you can find this program and more at jeffexchange.org or on your favorite podcast platform.